Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so the Astros take 2 out of 3 from the Rangers over the weekend. That was good to see. They looked much more like the normal Astros team over the weekend. And really, even the Sunday game, which looked a little closer than it actually was, 8-5, Seth Martinez gave up a 3-run home run in the 9th inning. They were up 8-2 in that game. Unfortunately, Josh Hader had to actually pitch on Sunday, but he came in, got the last out, struck out Corey Seager to end the game. So that it was way more like they drew it up on the chalkboard Saturday and Sunday. So hopefully that carries over to this week. I would say, and we'll get to this week in a little bit, but Seth, the three things that Astro fans are monitoring right now, outside of just night-to-night watching baseball. I'll call it the Loperfido situation down down in Sugar Land, where Joey Loperfido is just, I mean, tearing the cover off the ball. He's been the most productive minor league hitter across that layer of baseball. He's got 10 home runs. As the Astros were having another game in which they were giving up double-digit runs on Friday and losing in grand fashion, Loperfido was hitting 3 home runs for Sugar Land. He hit another one on Saturday. He's by trade an outfielder. He's been playing some first base. They told him in spring training, get that first base glove ready, which maybe shows what they kind of knew about their situation at the big league level with the first base situation. I thought it was interesting. You know, Jeff Bagwell was on the call this weekend on Space City Home Network. Jeff Blum was on vacation. I think Jeff Blum was at the Masters, if I'm not mistaken. Jeff Bagwell was in the booth this weekend, and on Saturday, they got into a conversation, he and Todd Callis, about Loperfido. And Bagwell said the first thing he did when he got home on Friday night was fire up the film of Loperfido's game in Sugarland on Friday night.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not like it's a huge surprise. It's not like the Astros fans are the only ones who have been monitoring Loperfido.
Right.
You'll be happy to know that both Dana Brown and Jeff Bagwell know who Loperfido is.
Yes.
And are seemingly excited about him. I think that the thing about Loperfido that's kind of interesting and unique is that he's built on his game so much and is very much a late bloomer that I'm guessing there's a part of the Astros in the organization that just want to take a step back and really just figure out, okay, how much of this is real, how much of this could potentially, you know, involve a step back at some point. He still strikes out a bunch, but he's got all this power. And every time we hear his name, it's almost like, oh yeah, he had 7 home runs last night in Albuquerque. Mm-hmm. It's a report such as that. It's really hard for me as somebody who doesn't want to watch another single Jose Abreu at bat. Yet at the same time, I've also watched all of these minor league pitchers get called up and get thrashed and wonder, all right, man, I know they don't have any choice right now, but my God, this can't be good for their development. I feel like Loperfido is, you got to try to see the forest for the trees and not bring him up in a moment of panic just because he's playing so well right now.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be up anytime soon. If I had to guess, you got to let this hot streak play out and then see if there's you got to see where his settle-in zone is. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, he's on this incredible hot streak right now. These things never last. So what does it look what does normal look like? Because this is abnormal. What does normal look like for him? And And how does he, you know, like how does he respond to pitch, even at that level, pitchers making adjustments to him and whatnot?
Plus, I mean, like you gotta, looking at the big picture, think about, all right, what is the greatest ailment for this team right now? And is Loper Fido the guy that's going, would Loper Fido have given you a more lopsided record? I know, like, obviously, you don't think about that with any other the pitching is the issue is what I'm trying to say, Sean. I mean, you've got literal minor league pitchers out there giving up 6 and 7 runs in a third of an inning. That's kind of a big deal right now. If Loper Fido can't pitch, he does nothing for what really, really ails the Astros right now.
Yep. So we're monitoring that. We're keeping an eye on Loper Fido. And then I would say the other two things, Seth, that Astro fans are tracking here are the two injuries to their aces, their co-aces, we'll call them. You got really good news on both fronts this weekend. We'll start with Fromber. Fromber's injury is not believed to be serious. He could be back by the Washington series, which is this Friday, starts this Friday, or the series against the Cubs, which starts next week. Now, we should point out that the Astros are heading into a part of their schedule, whereas by Wednesday they will have played 20 games in 21 days. Like the injuries in this pitching staff are coming literally like at the worst possible time schedule wise because they have no days off the first 3 weeks of the season. Starting on Thursday, they go into like a 12 or 13 day period where they have four different days off throughout there. They're off this Thursday, and then they're off again on Monday. They're off on a Friday in a couple of weeks. So they've got a bunch of days off here. Now, if they had their normal depth of pitching rotation, I would say, okay, well, there's no need to rush Fromber back. You can easily go with a five-man rotation, but they don't even have five guys you can trust right now. You know what I mean? Whereas in the past, you'd be like, oh, okay, well, they don't have to rush him back because, you know, Ronel Blanco is your fifth starter and he's trustworthy, whatever. They've got two guys they can trust right now. It's Ronel Blanco and Christian Javier, and that's it. So the schedule, while the schedule is quirky, and normally it would allow you to be a little more patient, I don't know that you can be patient necessarily with this.
I mean, one of those Fridays that they're missing is so they can travel to Mexico City. So that's like, I mean, the weirdness of that comes into, that's April 26th, they don't play because they're traveling to Mexico City. And I think with Fromber, Verlander might pitch on Friday. It feels like with Fromber, it's been framed kind of like, hey, he might be back before Mexico City, so which would be April 27th. I'd imagine it'd be nice for Urquidy if Urquidy's only one of several Mexican-born players in Major League Baseball. It'd be nice for Urquidy if he could come back by that point.
Yeah.
But I'm not. That's I'm not pushing for that or anything.
No.
So that's the. These guys coming back in a period when perhaps you'll get a few extra breaks from the schedule, that might get it feeling a little bit more like normal. And they are like you got to remember they're dead last in the AL West right now. They gotta recapture some ground. Playing at a 500 clip right now, well, everybody's as banged up as possible, isn't going to feel all that great in the standings.
Verlander threw 77 pitches in his second rehab start for the Hooks over the weekend. His numbers stunk again, but I have a hard time getting too worked up about this. 4 innings pitched, 5 earned runs, 7 hits, 3 strikeouts, 2 wild pitches, and 2 pitch clock violations as well. He checked every box on that bingo card, baby.
Bagwell had a nice story about one of his injury stints in the minors and just about how it was cool because you hear from his perspective where he is always just like brutally honest about when he hasn't played well. And he was talking about how he was injured. They put him ninth because the minor league team was still in the playoff race at that point. And he just flat out said, I don't know these guys. Like, I didn't know, you're out there, you're still injured. You're trying to hit against pitchers that you know nothing about.
Yeah.
And likewise with the pitchers, you know, Verlander's going to work on what he's working on. If the minor leaguers figure out that he's throwing a changeup or what have you, then, you know, or he's working on that, they're going to sit on it. So, you have to worry. I think with Verlander especially, he's, like a lot of pitchers, kind of brutally honest about everything. Like, him giving a positive appraisal afterwards is all I care about. I don't care about the numbers.
Yeah. Yeah, he threw 77 pitches. So, he hit his target on pitches. He felt good afterwards. Those are the big things. Yeah. And by the way, I feel like he's the benevolent Justin Verlander because Think of how many minor leaguers he has now given a story to over these last two starts that can say, I once got a hit off of Justin Verlander.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? Like, he's given, he has made, I mean, I think he gave up 7 hits in the last start as well. He gave up 7 in this one. I'm guessing they weren't spread over 14 different guys. There's probably a couple in there that had multiple hits against Justin Verlander. But he made, let's just call it 10 minor leaguers, a little more interesting. 10 years from now, 15 yeah. years from now.
He's the Johnny Appleseed of positive memories
for
minor
That's
leaders.
What I was looking for, yeah. He's a Johnny Appleseed.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So that'll be good. You get Fromber back, you get Verlander back. Like 7, we're a tenth of the way into the season here, almost exactly. They're 6-11. We're a tenth of the way into the season, and as I'm looking at it, you're 6-11. You go, okay, which of these things that have ailed them so far are going to sustain, and which ones right. can get fixed? Right?
Okay. So yeah, you're trying your hardest to be positive. I don't know how somehow you and I had reversed roles over the last couple weeks, and you've become the cynical one. Tell me if you think these things are reversible or not.
Okay.
Abreu, looking like Abreu from September last year.
No, we don't need to waste breath
Why?
On this. No.
Well, yeah, Sean, last year in September, 26 games, he had 7 home runs, had an .835 OPS.
Yeah.
Do you not believe that Abreu is capable of that?
My feelings on Abreu are well documented.
Abreu in the postseason last year, Sean.
What was he in the postseason, Seth?
He hit .296, had an OPS of .945.
Okay. I have a hard time looking at Jose Abreu, that's all. I hope it happens. They are going to give Jose Abreu all the runway he needs. Like, anybody who's hoping that a DFA is going to happen here, that he's going to get cut, designated for assignment in mid-May or something like that, you better buckle up. You better have plenty of whiskey handy, man, because he's going to be around for a while.
All right, okay, now let's see. Is this reversible? At the very least, let's say if Abreu doesn't turn it around to where he was in September through the playoffs last year.
Yeah, yeah.
If he doesn't turn it around, if you continue to have this situation where your catchers can be your backup first baseman, do you feel better about the way that Dana Brown handled the first base position in the offseason, including having John Singleton be your go-to dude?
I don't know. I guess it depends on what other solutions are out there. Like, people keep bringing up Brandon Belt's name. He's still out there as a free agent. He's better than both of these guys, obviously. But as you pointed out last week when we played that audio from it was Reggie Jackson, where he's like, oh, Blake Snell, you know, just got a little too expensive for us. That's not what we're going to spend the money on. And as you pointed out, it's like, well, yeah, you can't, because you've got a $19 million black hole vortex at first base with Jose Abreu. So I Caratini and Yiner Diaz, that by the time September rolls around, that might be the solution, is that you're using, you know, you're doing some sort of janky first base catcher thing with both of those guys. I don't know what it is. I do know that the manager right now has very little confidence in Jose Abreu. And this is where I will give Joe Espada credit. Mm-hmm. Is that not every decision he's made has been the right one, and the pinch hitting Singleton stuff that he's done has been a little weird. But, and this isn't me, people get worked up when we bring up Dusty's name, but Dusty kept Jose Abreu at cleanup in the 5-hole for the first 2 months of the season while he had an OPS in the 500s. Mm-hmm. Joe Espada is looking at things quickly here and going, no, you're in the 8-hole. And the only reason you're not in the 9-hole is because we don't want to bat you in front of Jose Altuve
and ruin it for him. Yeah.
Like, he's the worst hitter in the lineup. And thankfully, Joe Espada is treating him like he should, the worst hitter in the lineup.
Abreu is, you're bad enough that we can't put you ninth. Not when we're also batting Yordan second. That's the trouble with batting Yordan second. I'm a fan of it so far. But yeah, batting Yordan second. Boy, in getting to the point now, it's so nice when you see Yordan intentionally walked or pitched around, and then Tucker comes up to the plate and hits a home run. That's pretty nice.
Yes.
That's pretty cool to see. I know, spreading them out, this, that, the other thing, but it's also nice to see the psychological warfare of those guys right like that. I learned something this weekend, Sean, that I'm impressed with for the Astros. It's this. You remember Sean Dubin, the reliever who came in on Saturday? Was it Friday or Saturday? Saturday he came in and pitched one scoreless inning.
Yep.
Two strikeouts and a line out after
Gorgeous
that.
Beard, yes.
He's from near my wife's hometown.
Okay.
And I was talking to, and I knew Dubin was a late bloomer, but I was talking to my nephew, and I'd forgotten my nephew had played against Dubin in high school. And my nephew was like, yeah, I mean, he didn't throw faster than 80 in high school. Like, he was a good pitcher, but yeah. It was like there was nothing about Dubin that people looked at and thought like, yeah, that guy's gonna be in the majors some year. So the Astros this is yet another story of a guy, even though he went through the conventional route of, you know, playing
drafted,
college, all that stuff. And everything, he could end up being like Sean Dubin, who comes from this little redneck town, might be exactly like all the Latin American, prospects who were signed after everybody else thought they were over the hill.
The glitch in the matrix, is upstate New York.
I think he grew. I think my nephew. I don't know. I'll have to fact check my nephew on this. He was saying that Dubin actually grew after college, like grew in height after college.
Really?
Yeah.
True late bloomer, man. Yeah. That's wild. Got a great beard, too.
I haven't fact checked that, everybody, yet.
And I feel like 80, they were probably teeing off on him even in high school at 80 miles an hour, you know? Like, that's,
I'm sure he had really good stuff for,
probably. Good movement. Yeah, good
now
movement.
He said not faster than, I don't know if he meant in the 80s or what have you.
Yeah. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We acknowledge every Monday, 7:25-ish, we acknowledge big performance from the weekend. In this case, big performance from the season. We've got a few that we'll get to here coming up next. It is Acknowledge Me. Stay there.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.